Seek out your podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, everyone. Ever felt, you know, a bit intimidated by art, especially poetry? Or maybe you looked at something the experts rave about and just thought, why does this feel so out of reach? Like I'm missing the secret handshake. If that sounds familiar, well, you're definitely not alone. Today, we're diving deep into a really essential book that tackles exactly this, Randall Jarrell's poetry and the age. Our mission really is to unpack Jarrell's incredibly passionate defense of poetry. We want to understand why it seemed to kind of drift away from its audience back in the mid-20th century, and maybe most importantly, figure out how his insights are actually super relevant for you right now. Whether you love poetry already or you're just someone trying to connect more deeply with, well, any complex art or information. Think of this as your shortcut to a really key cultural conversation. It's packed with surprising thoughts and, honestly, Jarrell's very sharp wit. It's about more than just poems, isn't it? It's about how we read, how we think, maybe how we feel in this age of just
information overload.
It really is. And what's fascinating, I think, is how Jarrell, writing way back in the 1950s, diagnosed problems that frankly feel even more relevant now. He saw this growing gap, this chasm between artists, the critics, and, you know, the general public. And his core idea, the thing we'll keep coming back to, is that this disconnect, it isn't just because artists decided to be difficult, not entirely. Anyway, he argued it was a symptom of the age itself, you know, a world changing with mass media, increasing specialization and everything. And these new kinds of criticism that, well, sometimes seem more interested in theory than in just the raw human experience of the art. The problem for Jarrell wasn't that people lost the ability to appreciate things. It was more about these cultural barriers that kind of sprung up.
Okay, so let's talk about Randall Jarrell himself. Who was this guy? Because his background seems really key to his whole perspective here. He wasn't just one thing, was he? I mean, a celebrated poet himself, people might know The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner. That's a haunting one. But also a novelist. He wrote children's books, a translator, and crucially for us today, a really formidable literary critic. His own poetry, it seems, went deep into emotions, psychology, the anxieties of modern life, war trauma. He was definitely immersed in it all.
You've nailed it. That dual identity is exactly what makes poetry and the age so compelling. He was a top-tier practitioner, you know, writing this stuff, and also a top-tier analyst of it. He wasn't looking from the outside in. He wrote from the inside. He knew the creative process, the struggles, the intentions, the sheer work involved. And that gave his criticism this unusual mix of really high standards, but also deep empathy. He wasn't some academic spinning theories in a vacuum. He was a passionate reader trying to connect other people, connect you with the poems he loved. His authority came from, well, incredible taste, obviously, reading incredibly widely, that sharp wit we mentioned, and just this rock-solid belief that poetry mattered deeply to individuals, to society. Someone said he was writing not just about poetry, but for poetry, its best advocate, maybe.
Yeah, you can feel that personal connection, that passion, in his main argument. It's this powerful defense of poetry's value, its relevance, even when the world seemed kind of indifferent. And he asked the big questions, didn't he? Like, why does modern poetry sometimes feel so hard to get into? What's the actual role of a critic supposed to be? And how should we, you know, as readers, really approach these great poets? He was pushing for a different kind of engagement.
Exactly. Zooming out, Jarrell argues the crisis isn't that people suddenly lost their taste for poetry. That's too simple. Instead, he believed modern culture, certain institutions, academia, criticism itself, actually put up these artificial walls between poetry and its natural audience. He really pushed back against blaming the public for being, you know, uncultured or something. He pointed the finger more at how poetry was being presented, how it was taught, how it was talked about. He wanted what he called a democratic excellence.
Democratic excellence. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, the idea that the very best, most sophisticated poetry could still speak to ordinary human experience. It didn't have to choose between being deep and being accessible, fundamentally.
Okay, so how did he diagnose this? You mentioned a couple of key essays. Where did he start? There's The Obscurity of the Poet, right? He actually admits, yeah, okay, a lot of modern poetry is difficult. But then he reframes it, which I found fascinating. He argues it's not just poets being obscure on purpose. It's often a reaction to a changed world. Mm. You know, fragmented, specialized, everyone's distracted. We don't share the same cultural background noise anymore. People read less. Mass media grabs our attention. But here's the twist. Jarrell says the reader, that's you, shares some responsibility. He asks you to give poetry the same kind of patient focus you'd give, say, science or economics. He says the rewards, emotional, intellectual, are just as big.
That's such a critical point, and it leads right into the critic's role in this mess. His other big essay, The Age of Criticism, is maybe his most famous broadside. He argued the mid-20th century just became drowned in criticism, so much so that it started to overshadow the actual literature it was supposed to be helping us with. He was quite critical of the new criticism approach, dominant, then, you know, focusing hyper-intensely on the poem's words and structure, almost like a science experiment. He felt it got way too mechanical, too pedantic, disconnected from the feeling. And that's where his famous quip comes in.
The St. Bernard one.
That's the one. He said, you know, a St. Bernard critic would carry brandy to rescue the lost traveler, but the modern critic drinks the brandy himself and then bites the traveler.
Oof, that paints a picture. So criticism becoming about itself, maybe, not about helping the reader connect with the art.
Precisely. It became self-serving, his ideal critic. They should be a guide. Someone with intelligence and taste, sure, but their job is to point out the beauty, the power, to enhance your experience, not show off how clever they are or replace your reading with their interpretation. Criticism should serve the art and serve you, the reader.
But he didn't just complain, right? He actually showed what he thought good criticism looked like by diving into specific poets. He had this knack for taking figures we thought we knew and making us see them completely differently, like Walt Whitman. Whitman was kind of stuck as the good gray poet, right? Mm-hmm. Simple, optimistic, rah-rah democracy. Gerald apparently performed a rescue mission there.
He really did. It's fascinating. He basically said, okay, look past that cliche, see the weirdness in Whitman, the innovation, the radical parts. He zoomed in on specific lines, ones people often skipped over, and showed this startling psychological depth, really surreal images sometimes, and just profound originality. He didn't ignore Whitman's flaws. Sometimes he is long-winded, a bit silly even. But Gerald argued that stuff was tangled up with his genius. You couldn't separate it.
And then there's Robert Frost, the essay The Other Frost. Now, Frost was beloved, the comfortable, wise New England grandpa poet. Gerald took a hammer to that image, didn't he?
Oh, completely shattered it. It was revolutionary. He said, forget the comfortable Frost. Look at this other Frost, the one who gives you chills. A poet of, quote, terrifying darkness, deep psychological turmoil, existential dread even. He argued Frost was actually a stark modernist, as complex in his own way as someone like T.S. Eliot. That reading honestly changed Frost's studies forever, forced people to see the darkness.
Wow, that takes guts to challenge such a fixed image. He looked at Wallace Stevens too, right? Celebrated his language, his imagination, but still had a slight critique. Something about reality.
Yeah, a gentle one. He admired Stevens immensely, but suggested that sometimes Stevens's intense focus on the power of imagination could maybe detach him a bit from the messy, painful reality of human life, as Gerald put it. He wanted that connection.
Right, that grounding, which connects to his essays on William Carlos Williams and Marianne Moore, perhaps.
Exactly. He really championed them. Poets who rooted their work in the ordinary, the everyday details of American life. He saw it as a vital poetics of direct experience. Poetry connected to how we actually live, paying close attention to the world around us.
So it seems like his whole project, all these essays, they add up to a philosophy of criticism, a way of reading.
Absolutely. He's saying criticism isn't about cracking a code or solving a puzzle. It's about building a relationship with the art. And his deepest belief, I think, was in the humanity of poetry. It's fundamental. He pushed back hard against treating poems like just pretty objects or word games. For Gerald, poetry is the language of the human heart, the human mind at its most intense. Its goal, to make us feel, understand, ultimately, to make us more fully human.
And reading itself is active. That comes through so strongly. It's not passive consumption. It needs, what, generosity?
Yeah.
Patience. A willingness to actually be changed by what you read. He seems to be pleading for a more humane literary culture, where critics help and readers come with an open heart and mind.
That's it, exactly. He believed the real value is in the encounter itself, that complex personal experience you have with the poem, something you can't quite translate into other terms.
Okay, so if we boil it down, what are the core themes we should take away from poetry and the age? Things that maybe apply beyond just poetry.
Well, several really stand out. First, the idea of the critic as a passionate advocate, not some cold judge. Love for the art is the main qualification. Be an enthusiastic guide. Second, the need to rescue great artists from their cliches. Always challenge the easy label. Go back to the work itself. Look with your own eyes. Third, his powerful defense of difficulty. Art doesn't always have to be easy. Don't dumb it down. Challenge yourself as a reader or a viewer. The rewards are deeper when you put in the effort. And fourth, maybe the most central, the indispensable humanity of poetry. How it connects us to basic human stuff, makes us feel more alive, more understanding.
Those are huge. And there are a couple more that feel really sharp today, I think. Like his warning about institutionalized criticism, his worry that when criticism just becomes an academic career, it can get, you know, jargon heavy, formulaic, kind of lose touch with the simple love of reading, more about methods than the actual art.
Yes, that's a big one. He was wary of that. And connected to that, maybe, is the sixth theme, the democratic nature of poetic experience. He truly believed the ability to respond to poetry, to art, isn't some elite skill. It's fundamental, it's human. But society, he felt, often fails to nurture it. We lose out when we marginalize it.
And he just had such memorable ways of putting things. That St. Bernard quote is killer.
It definitely. Drinks the brandy himself and then bites the traveler. Nails that critique of self-serving criticism.
And the line about Frost. The other Frost. The one who causes the hair on the back of your neck to prickle. A poet of terrifying darkness. That just makes you want to go reread Frost immediately.
It does. Or how about this one on the reader's roll? The public, which has not read the poets, is aggrieved that it does not understand them. A bit pointed, but it's a challenge, right? You have to do the work.
Fair enough. And you mentioned one earlier about poets and lightning.
Yes. A good poet is someone who manages, in a lifetime of standing out in thunderstorms, to be struck by lightning 5 or 6 times. It captures that sense of inspiration being rare, unpredictable, not something you can just engineer. True creation is special.
Love that. And one more, about golden ages.
Right. The people who live in a golden age usually go around complaining how yellow everything looks. A classic Gerald observation. It's a reminder that we often miss the greatness in our own time because we're busy romanticizing the past or just complaining. Pay attention to now.
Okay, so bringing this all home, what does this mean for you listening right now? We've talked a lot about poetry, but Gerald's ideas, they feel bigger. Like how to approach difficult stuff. Art, information, anything complex, his advice seems to be patience, generosity. Don't demand instant understanding. Let yourself experience it first. What grabs you? What feeling comes up? The intellectual part can come after that direct personal connection. That seems like a key to unlocking things that feel walled off.
Absolutely. And that connects to another big takeaway, becoming a more empathetic and critical consumer of all information, not just art. Gerald teaches us to question the easy answers, the popular takes, the received wisdom. In this media-saturated world, it's crucial to ask, what's the other story? What cliche am I just accepting without thinking? What am I missing because I haven't looked closely at the source myself? It's about critical thinking, but with empathy.
And finally, maybe the most countercultural idea today, the value of deep attention.
Yes. His plea for patient, focused reading feels like such an antidote to our endless scrolling and constant distraction. The quality of our experiences, reading, listening, thinking, it's directly tied to the quality of attention we give. Gerald reminds us to reclaim that focus. It makes life richer.
So maybe the biggest lesson from poetry and the age is that art, maybe even understanding itself, isn't a product. It's not a puzzle with one right answer. It's a relationship you cultivate. The meaning, the power, it comes from your active, thoughtful, empathetic engagement. Being a good reader, in Gerald's view, makes you a more patient, perceptive, and, well, maybe a more complete human being.
I think you should walk away feeling more confident, actually. More confident in your own ability to connect with poetry or any complex subject. Gerald gives you tools. Tools to see real achievement and maybe to sidestep both the snobbery of elitism and the sometimes lazy appeal of oversimplification. The book lasts because it understands that art's health depends not just on great works, but on the whole culture around them, how we talk about them, how we value them, how we share them.
So here's a final thought to chew on as you go about your day. What comfortable cliche about an artist, an idea, maybe even about yourself or a situation you're in, what cliche might you be holding on to without realizing it? And what amazing new depths could you discover just by paying a little more patient, empathetic attention? That was our deep dive into Randall Gerald's poetry in the age. We really hope it sparks some new thoughts about how you engage with art, with ideas, with information in your own life.
Yeah, we definitely encourage you to maybe seek out some of Gerald's essays or check out Whitman, Frost, Williams, Moore. You might find a whole new world opens up.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.